racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM Online and at our website, stevebeck.com. Morning after the draw that set eight horses postward on Saturday in Preakness 148. And no surprises, no late additions, as we discussed yesterday with Dave Grenning. And I'll tell you, the surprise... The surprise yesterday was how amazing this facility was that they conducted the draw. I put up a, I guess I really didn't put up pictures that justified how unbelievable. It's a Guinness plant, the only Guinness plant in the U.S. It was unbelievable. Right in Arbutus. And really cool. Site of a previous brewery, post-war, I guess. And, I mean, just amazing. Called Open Gate. And this was the first time that the Preakness draw was open, essentially, to the public. And there was a great turnout. They, you know, as usual, they put on a terrific party and they had... you know, music and food, and it was just really nicely done, and I think you've got to add this Guinness Open Gate brewery to your, you know, your must see activities when you come to Charm City. As if we need more, because I'm a creature of habit and have to go to the same, you know, to see the same things over and over again. I'm funny that way. And I got my tour, Dickeyville. I haven't gone down to Dickeyville yet. I'm actually got to get out to Country Life, and they have a reception on Thursday, their annual Country Life Preakness gathering, and there'll be a Timonium visit to watch the Bree show. I mean, there's just, you know, there's certain habits and practices that you know, that are part of this week, and that also includes, you know, just kind of a few different food stops. Dave Grenning and I we had kind of a shocking scenario yesterday, because it was all ready to get over to Pioneer for Pit Beef. They are actually, shockingly, remodeling the little Pit Beef. I mean, the place is tiny. It's like a 15 by 15 hut, essentially. But they're in the middle of a renovation, which, if you've ever been to Pioneer, you might acknowledge that it was in need of a freshening, to say the least. But it looks like they're going to be closed all week. So there will not, it doesn't appear that there will be Pioneer Pit Beef in the offing. And then I said, all right, plan B, let's get over to the Essen House. They're closed on Mondays. So I had to reboot the whole concept, and we went to Catonsville. And I gave Dave a choice. There's you know, right on Frederick Road, there's all kinds of, Catonsville is adorable because it's, you know, it's named after Caton Bradar. I'm only partly kidding. You've heard Caton tell the story. I guess her dad did business years ago in Baltimore and around Catonsville, and he got her a Catonsville sweatshirt that she literally has had the rest of her life. She still has it. we always kid Caton Bradar about that. So we ended up at Catonsville Gourmet, which is very good. They've got a shrimp salad sandwich on garlic cheese bread. Forget it. It's unbelievable. Dave had a crab cake sandwich. So there's today's food update. But there's all kinds of cool things. I stay, you know, right up the block off of National Pike, and for years. So I'm a little distressed about about Pioneer, but it'll mean a newer, better version of Pioneer Pit Beef when they're ready. The field is ready and the Saturday card is ready, and it's nice. It's Friday's card, and odds are up and everything is set for Friday. And actually probably going to do, I want to do the Friday work today, because today is actually kind of a fairly quiet day. Although, as I mentioned, I may want to get over to, we've got the two-year-old Motown Landauer, who's working and is getting ready and who's a maniac. I'm looking forward to seeing him. Haven't seen him since he was a baby. And they train the two-year-olds over at Maryland, the companion facility for Country Life. It apparently started noon, so I might be able to see the Landauer train, which would be fun. So it may make two trips up toward Country Life this week. There's so many fun things. I went out to Mr. Naylor's a couple of years ago. Went out to Mr. Naylor's farm. That was very cool. And you wouldn't believe, one of the things that's amazing about this area is literally you cross the barrier of 695 and you're in the countryside in seconds. You're out, I mean, literally in countryside fields. It's crazy. That you literally are 10 minutes from Pimlico. Which you think of as a city, but even Park Heights and this in these neighborhoods, Woodlawn and Rutt City. I mean, you're far from downtown. I mean, this was when this racetrack was built. This was countryside. Make no mistake. The city kind of grew up around it. So went out to Mr. Naylor's place. Cyril Murphy had me out there, and that was very cool. I talked to Sean about Sean Clancy about that. And in fact, I really, even though Sean was on last week, we probably should have a follow up with Sean. Tom Law probably will be here with us Thursday. The media started to arrive yesterday at the draw. So. The Field of Eight, I think we pretty much knew that there wouldn't be any difficulties per se for anybody. I mean, this is not a scenario where the draw was going to make a huge difference. I think we're all just going to keep analyzing, what it means for. For Mage and the pace scenario. I suppose the biggest draw point, and this was really not a surprise, but National Treasure drawing the rail. I the assumption was, I mean, like we talked yesterday with Dave and Mig, we'll talk with John White later. I'm not going to say that being in the one hole forces National Treasure's hand, but they were going to go anyway. In fact, in to some degree, being on the rail may suit Johnny. It doesn't have to waste any strides getting over from anywhere. The expectation, and I retweeted yesterday the Craig Milkowski, CJ put out the first glance of the Timeform US pace projector, and interestingly, it's got actually three horses forwardly placed: National Treasure, Coffee with Chris, and then from the outside, First Mission. It's got them sort of in a flying V with Coffee with Chris just slightly ahead, and National Treasure inside. Pretty well equivalent with First Mission, and Mage draws the three, and that should actually suit Javier Castellano just fine. And I mean, if Mage is going to, I don't want to say dawdle, but I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's now been, you know, three straight starts where, you know, he's had, you know, less than a crisp start to his race. So here it is from the inside out, National Treasure with Johnny, 4-1. Chase the Chaos, Ed Mosier, tabbing Sheldon Russell. Keith Fustel made him 50-1. Mage, the 8-5 favorite, with Javier Castellano for Gustavo Delgado. Coffee with Chris, 20-1, with Jamie Rodriguez for John Salzman Jr. May get a chance to talk to Tom Rooney about breeding a Preakness starter. I think is a nice sidebar. Red Route 1. I know it's not the same as saying Fort or Forte, but Red Route 1 or Red Route 1. It's funny. When you talk about I never thought of this distinction, but when you talk about a road, it's a route, right? The direction you take, what route. And when we talk about a route of ground, it's kind of funny. This feels like a road or a direction. So it's Red Route 1 for me. Joel Rosario, 10-1. For Steve Asmussen, off the win at Oaklawn. Perform for Shug with Fergal Lynch, 15-1. You know, at 15-1, and the fact that Woodford and Lane's End and company all put up this money, you know, essentially what the horse has earned, not that they don't have deep pockets, but the fact that they supplement, it's hard not to acknowledge that supplementing to a race like this, you know, even in this era, has meaning. Perform from the 6 with Fergal Lynch and Blazing Sevens, Chad Brown playing a familiar hand, Errat Ortiz, 6-1 for Blazing Sevens from the 7. Should we read extra into Blazing Sevens drawing the 7? And First Mission, Luis Saez, Brad Cox, Godolphin, from the 8 hole, 5-2. There is your field for Saturday's Preakness. The rest of the card, a nice variety. It came up good. It's two excellent days of racing. You know, the undercard races got nice fields, and that includes, you know, things like a second level allowance that goes a mile and a 16th. That's early. There's what looks to be a nice full field of 3, 4, 5-year-olds going a mile 16th on the turf. Then the Sir Barton, and the Sir Barton invariably comes up a little bit on the short side. Arabian Lion in here is going to be obviously the heavy favorite. And you got Dennington in here for Kenny McPeak. Hammy Smith. It's great to see Hammy on the card. Hammy is his only starter on Saturday in the Sir Barton. Feeling woozy. An Irish War Cry. We love Irish War Cry. We've got our Irish War Cry filly that's getting ready to debut. Tappet's Conquest in here for Brad Cox and Bob LaPenta and Bob Edwards partnered up. Sheriff Ronnie, Rodolfo Sanchez Solomon. And Masterwork, Bobby Claceres, who I saw yesterday, with a Hertrick Fielding Mastery Colt, just broke the maiden at Laurel. So six-pack for the Sir Barton, another allowance, big full field on the grass, and then the stake sequence, the Chick Lang, Got seven in here. Kind of a interesting group. Having a meltdown comes back from the desert start, where he actually ran quite well. And this is the San Vicente winner, and looks to be very much the horse to beat, although McPeak's got Frosted Departure, who ran okay in the Pat Day Mile. There's a horse coming back on 2 weeks rest from Derby Day. Not from Derby, but from Derby Day. The Galarette, one of my favorite horses, historic horses. She doesn't get what she deserves, but thank God she's got a race named after her. Grim Motion's got a first-time North America, a Knight of Thunder, an Irish five-year-old mare. Last seen in Italy at places like San Siro and Campanelle. Her name is Sopran Basilia. Graham's also got Vergara for Gary Broad, and he's also got Bipartisanship in here. So Graham Motion, emptying the barn, as they say. The dinner party, the long-running turf mile and an eighth, the counterpart to the turf classic at Churchill. Just seven in here. Emmanuel comes back out of the maker's mark, stretches back out to a mile and an eighth. Never Explained for Shug, who looks tough in here, but Graham Motion's got Hurricane Dream, who looked exciting. Second time North America, winning an allowance at Keeneland, you might remember. Brendan Walsh with the Muniz runner-up, Rising Empire. Graham's also got Easter for Sal Cumin in here. And Mike Maker's got Atone. Graham's also got Speaking Scout, the Eclipse runner. So not a big field, but a nice enough field. The Ski Pat, full field. For the Ski Pat, the sprint, then the Jim McKay, the turf sprint. Got a dozen in there. Some of the usual suspects and a few other locals. Beer Can Man for Phil D'Amato, second off a year break and might be tighter here. Tried Keeneland. He was in that allowance with Front Run the Fed that came up yesterday. Madison Myers with Grateful Bread. Michael Moore, I mean, the kind of a nice, fun, you know, Mid-Atlantic special. The Maryland Sprint, which could very easily have Hirsch Jacobs' name attached to it since it was erased by the Chick Lang. The Maryland Sprint, 10-pack. Wonder Where Craig Is. Again, a lot of the usual suspects show up in here. Nakatomi for Wesley. yeah. There's a few very familiar names. It's prevalence in here. Cutting back and putting the blinkers on for Brendan Walsh. That's an interesting move. Straight No Chaser, Dan Blacker, comes across the country. And the Murphy, the always good three-year-old turf race. This has got a nice bunch in here. You got nine. It's a nice card. And then the Preakness, the 13th. And then the 14th is the the Arabian race. So luckily, you don't have to worry about it ending your multi-race sequences. All right, so there is a look at Saturday's card, and we'll start to get serious about it over the next 24 to 48 hours. Going to get Mark Cassie. I've been promising you a Cassie visit. We're going to get Cassie in here. I told you John White and got John Dooley is going to visit, catch up on Indiana. We missed last week, of course. Derby week kind of overwhelms everything. But John Dooley's going to visit to talk about tomorrow's stake sequence, four stakes, and actually a terrific pick five at Horseshoe Indiana tomorrow. Maiden race and then the four stakes, four state bred. A lot of state bred action tomorrow, actually, at Horseshoe. So we'll talk to Dooley for the first time this season. And we're also going to get a visit in maybe even this hour, I think, with Pat Morrell, first visit of the year, to talk about the meet, get a little meet preview in from Presque Isle. And they opened yesterday and more. All right. So let's get to Cassie and get the proverbial party started. I'm still trying to land Rooney. I want Tom. I would love to get Tom Rooney to visit, and we might have another. We got some administrative conversation to have as well. So. We'll see what who else pops up, because there's a couple of other irons in the fire. All right, but let's get Mark going in here, and I'm not sure where he is either. He could be anywhere, and I assume a lot of people will show up not just because they're racing here this weekend, but for Timonium, the chance to watch the 2-year-olds. Hey, Mark Cassie joining us now. Mark, I was just talking about Timonium. You doing any shopping?
What's that? No. If I am, I don't know about it. But TJ maybe. I'm not sure.
All right. All right. Somebody might. Somebody might call you and say, "Oh, there's a horse coming. We're sending you."
Yeah. That happens. Yeah. Sometimes.
Exactly. Well, I wanted to catch up with you. I didn't. You know, last week was just kind of a blur as we came out of Derby, and then you followed up with a nice stake win at Woodbine, and actually had a price on Sunday run well for Gary Barber at Woodbine. But let's start with. I don't know how often this is going to happen, that Wonder Wheel runs on a Friday and the greens all come to watch, and then they leave a little frustrated, and then another one of their horses wins a big stake the next day.
Well, that's a great... Friday was disappointing. It was, a head scratcher for me. I was expecting her to run very well. She didn't. So Friday, the Oaks was definitely disappointing. But then, as you said, Webslinger took care of it on Saturday, which was nice. He's turned out to be a pretty darn good horse. I think we gilded him after the Breeders' Cup, and I see a lot, a big difference in him.
Well, and that's one of those funny scenarios where people say, "Oh, it's too bad you gelded him." Yeah, but if we hadn't gelded him, we wouldn't have the horse we have. So you have to deal with that. Before we talk about the successes, what do you do now, Mark? How do you handle Wonder Wheel, who kind of just made a little bit of a late passed some horses late, but
yeah,
what's
bugging her? I don't want to make excuses for her, but again, things didn't go great, but she's been able to overcome those in the past, and she didn't this time. So she leaves today for Woodbine. We're going to take her up there, try to get her back in her winning ways. Possibly the Celine on the Tapita. I want to see how she trains on the Tapita. But really going up there more to kind of, I want to try her on the grass at some point in time. So that may occur there.
Here's an odd suggestion. Is there any thought to cutting her back?
Yeah, there could be. There could be. I mean, I know if you look at her Suncoast race where it looked like she, was going to win and then got like, but I have to tell you, Steve, if you watch, the Breeders' Cup, and if you know her very well, it's like when she won the Breeders' Cup, they couldn't pull her up after the race. And even when she ran in the Ashland, she doesn't act like a filly that can't go that far. But, maybe it's a possibility. Right now, I'm going to explore as I always do. Explore different options and see where we go. She owes us nothing. She owes us nothing. She's been very good to us. And you know, if she doesn't, if she trains and says, I don't want to do this anymore, that's always an option as well. I don't think the Greens would have any problem with that. You know, like I said, she owes us nothing.
And just, you know, maybe the change of venue. The one thing that's notable, and I'm looking at the numbers. I just pulled out the Oaks page, and actually, I do have for those of you that are, you know, that are Thoroughgraph users and registered to Thoroughgraph, the race of the week. You can look at all of the Oaks and Derby Day figures, and you know, she's basically still running the same kinds of numbers, Mark. It's interesting, and you know, that she just hasn't, it seemingly has not taken a maturity step forward.
Yeah, move forward. Yeah, which we see happen year after year after year. That's not a,
yeah,
not, that's not an totally uncommon occurrence.
Yep.
You know, so again, I right now, I want to focus in trying to find her a spot that she can win and maybe try to get some of her confidence back. So that would be my goal.
There you go.
Where that happens, I don't know. She's gonna have to, you know, show us where she wants to do that. But that's something that we've done many, many times. Hopefully, we can do it again.
Yeah, exactly, it's a work in progress, and
it's part of it. I think I've always said, you know, training horses kind of like, I play a little golf, so you can hit, if you hit a ball into the woods, you can look at it two ways. You can say, oh, I hit a ball into the woods, how terrible is that? Or you can say, how great a shot can I hit to get out of the woods? Right?
Yeah.
So one of my favorite sayings too is, you know, you got to pull a rabbit out of the hat. Well, that's my job, and that's what I'll be trying to do.
There it is.
Right. I've also told many owners, I said, I've tried all the tricks and there are no rabbits in that hat.
that's an empty hat.
You got it.
It's like Rocky and Bullwinkle. Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. Again, that trick never works. Oh, I love it. Well, we're hoping for, and obviously rooting for. Then in the meantime, here is the American Turf on Saturday. We'll talk about some other some other undercard race performances in a minute, but this was just the same identical situation as a month earlier at Keeneland, where I was on the radio doing the 2 to 5 show, so I couldn't, you know, I wasn't going to be able to go and congratulate, you and the Greens and Aaron and everybody. But then I find out that they did the exact same thing, and they got on the plane and went back. And so maybe that should be a new plan. Don't stay around.
I just want to say to you and tell you, the Greens are so classy. Not one. They actually take it better than I do. My wife recently was saying, you know, normally the trainer has to talk the owner off the cliff, or, you know, that, and it's the opposite. John Green's giving me a pep talk, you know, so that makes him so special. And I was excited to win their 2,500th win,
right,
with Web Slinger. Boy, if you look at his Thoroughgraph number, it was pretty impressive. In fact, I think it was superior, of course, the filly over the fillies and the American Turf.
Well, Web Slinger had that trip at Keeneland, and so he was sort of a wise guy idea going into the turf, and when we were on the air, we kind of ran through the prices and said, you know, Web Slinger at 20 to 1 is, you know, if you were,
well, a lot of that, Steve, was due to the post as well, right?
Yeah,
terrible post, almost impossible to win from there. Yeah,
Well, you got a tremendous, and it's funny because, you know, here was Javier Castellano, who
is yeah, what a day for Javi.
Yeah,
we didn't know that. We thought that would maybe his biggest win of the day, and it wasn't even close.
Well, and he knows, you know, and he has gotten Web Slinger close repeatedly this year, and you guys hooked up together, you know, for Web Slinger at Gulfstream, and the mm-hmm. allowance win to start the season, just got beat in that Colonel Liam, and was just a little late arriving after the troubled voyage in the Transylvania.
When I talked to Avi in the paddock, you know, obviously, Steve, I get around a lot and I go different places. So sometimes, you know, like with Web Slinger, I was there for him at Keeneland, and then I didn't, you know, I got back. I was there the last week of Derby week, and I told Avi in the paddock, I said, Avi, this horse, I've never seen him so good. And he said, you know, I think the difference between him winning that race and his previous races, he dropped back and tried to make a big run. But Avi said, he said he was on his game today. You know, he put him up there pretty close. And if he wasn't that close, he doesn't win. So, yeah, I mean, Web Slinger, you know, I can't say enough of good things about him.
This is a constitution. And was bred by the Ramseys out of the Hartspun mare.
I got to tell you, you know, as a horse trainer,
yeah,
I just can't say enough great things about constitutions. I mean, they are just tremendous racehorses. They can do a little bit of anything, and I call them a little bit. I find them to be overachievers. So many sires, you know, and are underachievers. I think Constitution's an overachiever, and I mean, I'll take all the constitutions. If anybody wants to send me any, I'll take them.
All right, so those of you, I'll look at the Timonium. Let me look at the Timonium catalog and yeah, see. Well, and how about Constitutions for $50,000? That you know?
Yeah, that was in June.
Yeah,
in June in OBS.
Yeah.
So we went. I think I was saying to John Green the other. I said less than a year, and he's made $750 million for us. And it shows you that you don't have to buy the sales toppers to, you know, to be successful. And he is a great example of that.
Well, and it's an encouraging example too. It also speaks to, the conversation we had yesterday about Arcangelo with Jenna Antonucci and John Ebert, who had pretty much, you know, had bought pretty much what he was going to buy, but then had one more on the list and ends up, you know, saying I'm going to buy this one more horse, and they end up with what might be, you know, a sleeper Arrogate.
Yeah, what a nice horse he is.
Right. And same scenario, inexpensive purchase.
And you know what? And that's what makes sport so great. You know, you just never know where they're going to come from, and that's what makes it super. Everybody has a chance. Everybody has a chance. And again, you know, in so many places, it's all about. The big money, who has the big money, and the person or the team that has the most money always wins. That's not the way it works in horse racing, and that's what's so wonderful about it. You can see a $5,000 horse beat a $1 million horse.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, there's a lot of things that are challenging about the game, but you know, everybody's got a fighting chance.
We have a lot of challenges. So it's disturbing. It's I'm concerned for my, not for me. I'm concerned for my kids that are pursuing this. You know, I've got Norman who's done tremendous, and I have two more behind him that want to be horse trainers. So. Yeah, it's concerning.
Well, I don't know if you want to dive into this, but you know, tomorrow we're going to talk to both Lisa Lazarus and Eric Hamelbeck.
I don't mind diving into it a little bit. I don't mind, you know. I think the biggest frustrating part is, you know, taking so long for things to come out. I think that's very frustrating. That's one. And I don't have to tell you, Steve, you know, I'm a Heisa fan and I back Heisa. And the reason, the biggest reason is why, what you've just seen. And that is that, I want to, if something's out there, I want to know it right away. And the other thing is, look, if it's a overage, if it's a therapeutic drug, right now, the way it works is you are guilty. You are guilty. I could go to the commission and say, Steve Bick gave my horse this without me asking. And they would tell you, too bad, it's your fault. With what's going to happen with Heisa, if that scenario goes and it would say, look, Steve Bick did this, they're going to take your purse away, which is fine because you were positive, but they're going to look at it and you could be held blameless or you could be, that doesn't happen now. People don't understand what we have to live with. And that is, we can do nothing wrong. Nothing wrong. And it can be an accident of some sort. It can, you know, we have a lot of moving parts. We have horses running all over the place. We have horses going in vans. Who knows, with, you know, going from one place to the other, who knows, and are handled by different people. And that's why I've been so big on Heisa, because at least you get to go, you plead your case, and you actually have a shot of them saying, look, we understand it's not your fault. And let's look at it. Now, look, if you're doing something wrong, and I'm not going to say any names, but it's going to be easy. I was absolutely floored last night when I saw the positive that came out of Hot Springs, and he was only given 30 days. That should have been a year. That is not a therapeutic drug. That is a PED.
We're talking about the Deodoro.
That is absolutely that. We cannot have that. The deal going on with Todd, that's a different story. That is meaningless. Meaningless. The disappointing part there is the 8 or 9 months that it took to find it out. That's the disappointing. And that's what Heisa is not going to do. Heisa is making sure we have all these different places where they do drug testing. You may not get the drug testing back for a month. You may not get the results back for a month. Heisa, you'll have it back in 10 days. And if there's a problem, you're going to be notified and you're going to have a hearing and we're going to have the results and we're going to have them less than 30 days. Isn't that what we all want? Right?
It would seem. I mean, there's a lot of things that there's a lot of moving parts to the Forte scenario. But the most egregious element of it that it just is making people just frustrated and disgusted is the, you know, the period of time that it took, you know, for the thing to reach the reporting portion. And it's something that a lot of people were aware of, that was in the works. And you hear about these, you say, you know, I hear there's a positive, you know, the word gets out. I mean, the people around, but you, as I've said repeatedly, I'm not reporting on rumors. You're going to let the mechanics of the regulators let it happen the way it happens. The piece today by Matt Hegarty that, you know, the New York Gaming Commission came out and gave the specifics of the timing of each machination that was involved with Karen Murphy. And the requests for the lab, which settling on a lab to use, that was 90 days. Then the lab, the lab's work is going to take, 3 to 6 weeks invariably. Yeah. And then there, the result comes back. Now there's the legal wrangling over the scheduling of a hearing. And, they basically played, whack-a-mole with the date. That's the ugliest part of this.
And you know what, Steve? I don't know enough about it, and I wouldn't even try to get involved in that. So I don't know enough about it, and I don't want to comment. I have the utmost respect for Todd Pletcher. So it can't continue this way. It cannot continue this way. We're going to be a has-been. It cannot continue to go the way we're headed. And we status quo doesn't work anymore. It's not working. And we're seeing it day after day. And look, we have to do something. I'm ready. Personally, I'm ready if it continues to call it a day and play golf. Because I am not gonna continue to deal with this nonsense.
Yeah, and you're not alone, and horse players are not alone. Are on the same on the same wavelength. There's also the part of this that I when I get disheartened about elements of the game, the way in which the assumptions are made, and I see people talking about this, this Forte scenario, and saying about, the cheating that Pletcher's part of it too, and we've tried repeatedly for decades, literally 15 years, to explain therapeutic meds and. The difference between those and if you want to talk about the Diodoro scenario, it's kind of a throwback to milkshaking.
It's night and day.
Yeah,
night and day. But everybody gets thrown in the one because everybody, the majority of people want to think bad things, and no matter what you say or whatever you prove, that's our society. That's the way it works. But there's a huge difference. There is a huge difference. And we have to get that straightened out. And again, so you're telling me things right now that I haven't read the New York deal.
Yeah.
Or with Karen Murphy. Karen Murphy's a wonderful lady. Known her for a long, long time. She's doing her job. And what we have to do is, as I said, this is not working. There's lots of them out there that we haven't heard about.
Right.
For the same reason. The reason this one's so big is because we're talking about a champion.
Two
champions. A champion horse and a multiple champion trainer.
Exactly. And a prominent owner, obviously. You know what's funny that people probably don't think this way per se. To go back to this TOC2, the carbon dioxide level, and for those that we haven't talked about milkshaking in forever, but essentially the way it was employed when everybody seemed to be doing it. Was taking bicarbonate of soda and sugar and Gatorade, and what it does is it reduces lactic acid in the horse's system, and so lactic acid buildup is what slows humans and horses and athletes down, and that was the concept. And there's a level that 37 parts per whatever, and when the carbon dioxide level exceeds that, it's basically a reading that says, you know, the horse was milkshaked. I'll say one thing about that. The horse that was tested for the carbon dioxide level ran sixth in that boathouse row stake. And the fact that we're testing a sixth place horse is encouraging that this is how, you know, this is how the thing was discovered. Because I can tell you, you know, for all the platitudes about the rest of the world, the rest of the world isn't testing sixth place finishers. They're lucky if they even test winners, the rest of the world.
Rest of the world, too. I get so tired of hearing about, you know, oh, there's no medication. There's no, that's the biggest crock of, you know what? The rules in other countries are so much more lenient than ours. And the testing, like you said, the testing. So that's all baloney. Yep. The only thing I can say is this. Look, we have a serious problem. And if we don't fix it, we're not going to have to worry. We're not going to even have a sport. Lisa Lazarus is a smart, smart lady that listens and she understands. And I don't know Eric very well, but he's got to be a smart man too. He wouldn't be in the position he is in. Let's put the two of them in a room. You know what I can always remember when I was a little boy? My dad had a poster, and it was a little go-kart stuck in the mud. And you had two boys pushing on the front and two boys pushing on the back, pushing against each other. And I can remember that. I was 7 or 8 years old. And I said to my dad, what's that mean? He says, we all have to push in the same direction or we're going to be stuck in the mud our entire lives. And there you go.
Yeah.
We got to push in the same direction. And that means give and take on both. But we have to do it. Or guess what? We're going to stay stuck in the mud. Next thing you know, we're not going to have a sport.
Mark, I appreciate this.
See, I didn't really want
to. No, it's good. It's very good.
I'm not very compassionate about this. I mean, I was so frustrated last night when I read the news because, you know, here you've got Todd just, you know, getting blasted again. I understand. It's not really about what the drug was because it was nothing. It's more about how long it took to come out. But you're talking night and day in these two drugs, and we have to stop that.
I can't argue, and we'll flesh it out a little bit more between Eric Hamelbeck tomorrow, Lisa Lazarus, and Alan Foreman will be here probably Thursday for his annual State of the State address that we have every year.
That won't be too good
in this office. Well, it's always a mixed bag. Around these parts, the glass is always half full, Mark.
Good.
Speaking of half full, and maybe even more than half full, nice to get our flash drive. Her season rolling along. The Gosapper mare for Mrs. Weber wins nicely in the whimsical. He actually finished 1-2 in here with Gary Barber's Miss Speedy. And then it was Gary's turn, actually. And I know Ice Chocolat didn't win, but that was a very good effort at 10-1 behind Anarchist, Josie Carroll's runner in the Jacques Cartier on Sunday. Pretty nice weekend for your runners in the two stakes.
Yeah, we were proud to finish 1-2 in the one race that you said. Our flash drive's kind of a unique situation. I think that I was a little late to the party with her, figuring her out. Interesting enough, when she ran, what was that? What was the name of the race she won? Sprinting the last race, it was the Bessarabian?
Last year? Or yeah, the Bessarabian.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end of the year.
Well, that was to be her last start. And she was going to the breeding shed. And after that, I had a couple conversation with Mrs. Weber, and I said, you know what, this filly's a serious sprinter. You know, we're always looking for good horses. This horse could, this filly could be any time of sprinter. Can we run her another year? And so she agreed to it. And so that there was a little pressure the other day with that, because, you know, it was kind of my idea and my push not to retire. So, but I think you're talking about a serious sprinter. She's a nice horse, and I probably, it only took me a couple of years to figure it out, but, maybe I was running her too far.
Well, and she rates kindly for Patrick Husbands, and, you know, we're going to have to see her at some point on dirt, if the goal is going to be the filly and mare sprint at Santa Anita.
Well, I would think probably. Well, we're going to see. You're going to probably see her next in what the Royal North, which is 6.5, I think, on the turf, and we'll go from there. Yeah.
All right. Well, our flash drive, and there was nothing wrong with Miss Speedy's effort.
No, Miss Speedy actually ran very well. It was maybe her best effort to this point. Kind of got held up a little bit and saved ground around the turn, and she's Ontario Sire, so there's some nice spots for her.
Talk about the action on Sunday, because Ice Chocolat, the now 5-year-old gelding of Gary's, you know, came out of all I've done is talk about that allowance this morning at Keeneland. That 5.5 furlong turf sprint has come up repeatedly. It's very funny.
You mean the grade 2 or grade 3 allowance? Yeah,
just crazy, right? Know. That was the funny race.
Yeah, I think with him. His race, actually, thoroughgraph-wise or race-wise, he ran his best race ever. He definitely likes the Tapita. He's a horse that came from Brazil, trained just okay. Another one that, since we gelded him, became a serious racehorse. Yes.
Nice. Now that, listen, that, and Gary's happy to have any kind.
Gary, two things that the Greens and the Gary have an ass. And it's quite obviously with Web Slinger, he got beat 4 lengths in a troubled trip in the Breeders' Cup. And I think John's first thing after that was, I think he'd make a good gelding. And I'd said, absolutely. So
there it was.
Gary, I don't even have to ask Gary. Gary will gild everything. this is the advantage when you train for people that have been in it as long as both of them have. They understand it. They get it. It's a little tougher when you have somebody, a newer person in, you say, you know, I want to gild them. I can remember I trained some horses for a guy who owned a lumber company in Atlanta. And I said, we really need to gild this horse. And he said, I don't think so. I said, really? I said, okay. I said, I'll tell you what, let me come to your lumber company and run things for a week. And you come train horses for a week and we'll see how it goes. And I know nothing about lumber. And he said, gilding.
I love it. Speaking of Gary, and I'm curious, maybe think of a horse. Where are you with Classic Car Wash?
You know what, Steve? He was just beat. Those races just took so. You know, he's kind of a slight horse, anyways. And look, we had a little Derby fever. Probably, you know, ran him one too many times. The Bluegrass, he was just a wore out horse. And I'll tell you where he is. He's at our training center and he just passed me about 10 minutes ago.
So he's working. Training. He's basically lightly maintaining training. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, this is what we do. And again, you know, I just can't say enough about the Gary Barbers, the Charlotte Webbers. You know, the Greens, when they need time, they get time. And that's the difference.
Well, got to ask you, too, about a couple of others. We're almost at the top of the hour, so I'll take you to the top. Papilio, fourth in that spot in the Edgewood and, you know, beaten maybe a length. for everything. Yeah. It was kind of a weird race.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in her, to be honest. Now, I don't know. She was a little closer to the pace than she normally is.
Right.
I don't know if that was a factor, but both of those horses, the plan are with Papilio and Web Slinger, they're staying at Churchill. Papilio's going to run in the Regret, and I think it's called the Audubon is for Web Slinger. We're going to just leave him there in Kentucky for now. Hopefully run those two races and then probably bring them both to New York, maybe looking at for Saratoga, the Lake George or something like that with Papilio.
Sure. How about the interesting Curlin filly, the maiden winner, solo album that Eclipse and Gary Barber and Steve Rocco own that finally broke through? And there certainly is talent there. Where do you go from here?
Yeah, if we could get a mile and a half race, we'd be fine. She has just one speed. She's been, to me, beautiful filly, great moving filly. Just hasn't gotten it all together. And she got lucky the other day. She got away with no pace. She just galloped along. And, you know, it was a good race. She's going to, for her, she's got such a great pedigree. She costs a lot of money. So my job now is to find her black type, if that's possible. And I don't know where that is exactly, but I can tell you the farther, the better.
What about, you snuck one in on everybody. Gary's joined the dance, the Shackleford, that won that little stake last week at Gulfstream.
Yeah, that was, there's a filly that she belonged to the Greens. She went in the sale, and, Gary said, "What do you think?" And I said, "I think she's a nice, solid filly." She didn't have enough pedigree that the Greens felt like they wanted to make her part of the broodmare band down the road.
Yep.
And John Green's been good. We've sold a lot of horses that we think aren't just top horses, and they don't mind. They want to sell horses like that where they can go out and win races for people, because that's how you sell them. And so it worked out pretty good for both. Gary asked me about her. I said she's a nice filly, and he bought her, and she won the stake. And I, interestingly enough, that morning Gary asked me what I thought, and I said I think Join the Dance can win. And I was shocked that she paid, I think she was 12-1 or something.
Yep.
So I was kind of shocked by that price. But anyways.
Well, we're at that portion where we look ahead. You chose not to run anything here Friday, Saturday. Pimlico.
Yeah, I just didn't have anything. I love Pimlico. I love Baltimore. It's my wife, Tina, and I's one of our favorite places to visit. A lot of fond memories there.
Yes, yes.
A Preakness winner. It didn't work out that way for us. It all those races kind of come a little close. It's one thing for the Kentucky Derby to the Preakness, but when you run those, a horse like Web Slinger and Papilio like that, you don't want to come back in 2 weeks with those type of horses.
No.
So you kind of got to make a choice. Do you want to run there, or do you want to run at Pimlico? And Churchill has always been good to us. It's where I kind of started my career, and Churchill was kind of a no-brainer for those two.
Well, speaking of Churchill, only one horse I'm going to ask you about, and it's in the first race on Thursday, the two-year-olds, and here's a first-time starter, obviously. Not that some haven't already run a couple of times around the country. George's Honey, $170,000 Keeneland yearling, a Jimmy Creed. This is going to be on the dirt out of a Bernardini mare. Seems to be working pretty nice, a nice series of half miles.
Yeah, I've trained a few horses for George Yeager over the years. Extremely nice man. But normally I was getting horses from different people, and I said, "Let me buy you one horse." And so This is the filly I bought him. She is the half, and I can't remember his name, to the horse that won all the races and then bled in the Breeders' Cup, the two-year-old.
We just talked about Tim Martin's horse, Tyler's Tribe.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure this is, and I may have my mares mixed up, but I think this is his half-sister. I know she's a half-sister to a pretty good horse that is now a three-year-old. But we like her.
It's Sharp as Attack that this one's a half to.
Oh, okay. Sharp as Attack. That's the Sharp as I'm sorry. Yes. That's the Sharp as Attack that Doug O'Neill had, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, but that's a nice horse as well. And so that intrigued me a little bit. She's a real pretty filly, and she's worked well. Wish we weren't in the one hole, and you heard me say it a million times, winning first time out is not necessarily always our goal, but I would expect her to run well, and it wouldn't shock me if she did win.
Nice. Ray Lou Gutierrez aboard.
Yes.
Mark Cassie, I knew we had lots to talk about, and as usual, I can pull out other things, but I also appreciate the rip from today's headline conversation.
Okay, well, thanks for having me.
Mark Cassie, everybody. Mark E. Cassie on your Twitter machine. And from Woodbine to Churchill to Gulfstream, actually. Mark's all over the place. Yeah, he's got a bunch. Actually, he's got a bunch. You know what's funny? He's got a bunch of allowance horses, and which kind of tells you a little bit about his approach that are entered. Couple of allowance races on that 2-year-old race is actually Friday. I think I said, did I say Thursday? On Thursday, he's got allowance runners at Belmont, Mrs. Green, Lois's namesake. There's been a couple of namesakes for Lois Green as Aaron Yagoda tells me. The real brains behind the operation. but that, Mark's got a ton of allowance starters this week. But I did want to ask about the 2-year-old because we're really knee-deep now. The 2-year-olds are popping everywhere. Yeah, he's got two in a Churchill Thursday. One, the Mrs. Green with Dylan Davis in the 8th, the Thursday at Belmont. And then the 2-year-old opener at Churchill Friday, George's Honey. Oh, good old Henley's Joy. And this was a kind of a stake-ish young horse. I mean, the purse is $134,000 on allowance, optional claim of the 8th at Churchill on Friday. $134,000. There's graded stakes that are only 100. Amazing. And he's got some maiden claimers, looks like, later in the week too, Gulfstream, and he's got Conman too with Dylan in an allowance at Belmont on Friday. So, but nothing this weekend. Gonna head to the break. We've got a busy hour two. Pat Morrell's gonna join us, and we'll get our meet preview in for Presque Isle Downs. Beautiful Erie. Erie's lovely. What do you mean? Come on. Erie's lovely. People just think, because you know, Erie's a funny word. it's right on the lake. Yeah. No, Erie's all right. We'll be there again this fall. We'll do the same act that we did last fall. We'll probably broadcast there the day after Labor Day, en route to Kentucky Downs. And then, on the way back after Keeneland, we'll be there for the big filly and mare sprint for the Masters. That's the plan. Tom Rooney is going to